a lot of the electronic bullying. Most school districts will say, you know, you can only use your computers for academic things, right? You can write your papers on it or do a computer science project, but we don't let you use Facebook, or we don't let you use Yik Yak or all of these other like anonymous forms of bullying, and we don't let you use your cell phone, so we don't really have the opportunity to address cyberbullying, because it's not happening here. It happens at home, and what are we supposed to do at the schools if it's happening at home? My personal opinion is it might be happening at home, but it's being brought back to the schools, and one, you know, it is happening at the schools too, but if your rules are that it can't be technically happening at schools, the effects are still being brought to the schools, and so schools really do need to address that, but I think they're having a hard time regulating what happens outside of school, you know, versus traditional face-to-face bullying, which often does happen in the school. I think they're in a difficult place in terms of navigating those waters.
If I could just add, in New York, we did, our law does say if it affects, you know, what happens in school. So it can be personal outside of school cyber behavior, but if it affects the attending at school, the school has to address.
That's great. Yeah. That's great.
Thank you. Our second presentation is from Ms. Laura Altman. Ms. Altman is actually the manager of sexual health in the Chicago Public Schools, right here locally. In this role, she directs the CDC-funded HIV-STI prevention initiative and oversees all sexual health-related work across the entire district. And Chicago is one of the largest districts in the country. She includes sexual health education, sexual health services, and LGBTQ issues and initiatives in her job description. Her background and research focuses on adolescent health and community mobilization. Laura Altman.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I'm Laura Altman. That was my introduction. So I also wanted to point out that my co-authors, Elizabeth Jarpy Ratner from University of Illinois Chicago here, and Dr. Mike Fagan from Northwestern is also in the back of the room as well. So we'll direct any tough questions their way after this. So I oversee sexual health in Chicago Public Schools, and I'm going to be talking about a specific training that we developed last school year that really focused on creating safe and supportive environments for all youth, especially LGBTQ students. So I have no disclosures, and this research was funded by the CDC, and its contents are solely the responsibility of the authors. So like I said, I'll talk about the multidisciplinary collaboration that designed and implemented this training. I'll discuss a little bit about our mixed methods evaluation findings and then talk about what we're doing now to try and take this to scale and reach more teachers and staff in our district. So a little bit about Chicago Public Schools. We're the third largest school district in the country, and actually last year we had just under 400,000 students in the district, 86% of whom were considered economically disadvantaged. I'm from the Office of Student Health and Wellness, and so we aim to remove health-related barriers to learning so that students may succeed in college and life, and sexual health is just one area that we work on. So our sexual health work, which is funded by the Division of Adolescent and School Health, we use the model that is put forth by the CDC, so we focus on sexual health education, sexual health services, and as well as safe and supportive environments, and it's in that last piece that this training for teachers fits in and is one component that we're doing there. And then we also actually administer the YRBS in Chicago Public Schools, as well as school health profiles as part of our grant. So we know that LGBTQ students, and I should pause and say, in Chicago Public Schools, when we use Q, we use it as questioning with our students and in our sexual health education curriculum. So we know that LGBTQ students are at risk for adverse outcomes, both health outcomes and academic outcomes, and that the school environment can play a large role in that. So 92% of students report hearing negative message about being LGBT, and 74% of those heard those messages in school. We also know that over half feel unsafe because of their sexual orientation or gender expression in school, and over half report experiencing discriminatory policies or practices in school. And then bullying, whether it be physically and or verbally harassed and or assaulted in the past year, is also a large issue for LGBT students. 66% of them report having experienced that, and this is nationally. And transgender and or gender nonconforming youth disproportionately experience bullying and harassment. They also experience harsher school discipline and are often blamed for their own victimization. So our YRBS data tells us a lot as well about how our students in Chicago public schools are doing. And we see pretty big disparities, significant disparities there as well. So that first data point is, was just discussed in the previous presentation about missing school because you felt unsafe to or from school or at school. And so we know that 20% of LGB students, excuse me, report that compared to 10.8% of heterosexual students. Also, we know that almost 30% report being bullied on school property compared to 10% of heterosexual students, and then almost 30% of LGB students attempted suicide one or more times in the last year compared to just 5.8% of heterosexual students. And these disparities exist as well when you look at being physically forced to have sexual intercourse when you did not want to, and also being physically hurt on purpose by someone you were dating. So it was in that context that we decided that we wanted to do a training for teachers and staff that focused on creating more safer and supportive environments for LGBTQ students, as well as one that focused on reducing dating violence, and sexual harassment. So to do that, the Office of Student Health and Wellness, we first identified four community-based organizations that had experience and content expertise in training adults to work with youth on these topics. We developed objectives with the community-based organizations that we were hoping to achieve. And then the CBOs themselves identified their best practices. They drew on research and on their experience to develop the content for the training, and we were involved to make sure that everything was relevant to our teachers and was in line, also included content about our policies. And then we worked with the evaluation team, led by Northwestern, to develop the instruments and the evaluation methodology. And the instruments were actually reviewed by the CBOs themselves as well to make sure that they were reflective and that they made sense and that they would work for the teachers. So all in all, this took about 3.5 months to do, and we met about 7 times. So the objectives for day one, which focused on LGBTQ and all youth, we wanted to make sure that participants could walk away understanding just basic terminology and concepts, including how is identity developed and when, you know, the ages at which sexual orientation and gender identity start to be known and to develop. We also wanted to make sure participants could understand that privilege, power, and oppression and how it relates to LGBTQ students, affects them in schools and just in society. And we also wanted to make sure they understood national laws, local laws, and our own school district policies around these issues. And for day two as well, we wanted to teach participants about identifying and understanding violence and the spectrum of violence, being able to respond to students who actually disclosed experience of dating violence and sexual violence, and again, understanding the policies and laws that were related. And both days focused on skill building through the discussion of scenarios and role plays, and both days concluded with actual action planning for teachers and staff to take back to their schools. So we had 28 people on the first day and 26 people on the second day attend, and it was a 7-hour training both days. It was actually facilitated by the CBOs with input from us, the Office of Student Health and Wellness. We were able to offer substitute pay to the classroom teachers that attended, which was really helpful for the schools. And actually, we were able to offer a small stipend as well after the PD happened to the community-based organizations. And the training methods, we tried to be dynamic so that they involved lectures, discussions, small group activities, role plays, and videos so that it wasn't just 7 hours of sitting and listening to people talk. To evaluate this, our quantitative evaluation focused on a pre- and post-test that was implemented on day one and on day two of the training. And then we did an electronic survey 30 to 45 days after the training. And you can see the sample sizes there. And then we also were able to do qualitative interviews. And so these interviews were conducted by two members of our evaluation team, and they interviewed, they were semi-structured interviews, and they interviewed 27 staff members. 12 of those staff members were PE teachers, and that's because in Chicago Public Schools, a lot of PE teachers end up teaching sexual health education. But we also were able to interview support staff like counselors, core subject teachers like science teachers, and some principals and assistant principals from the 17 schools that we worked with. So I'm going to focus the results mostly on day one of the training, which focused on LGBTQ youth. So we did see that a lot of participants came into the training on day one with relatively high levels of knowledge. So there were significant gains in understanding the definition of what it meant to be transgender, and then also significant gains in knowledge around the CPS guidelines to support transgender and gender nonconforming students. And these guidelines had just passed in October of 2014, so they were still relatively new to the district. For attitudes, we saw a significant change in viewing the importance of transgender topics, but we did not see a significant change in the response to how problematic is LGB bullying or how problematic is transgender bullying. But participants did report significant increases in confidence around implementing a lot of the strategies that we talked about. So that includes discussing LGBTQ topics in the classroom, referencing the relevant policies, organizing an LGBTQ-related event in their school, addressing bullying. And then at our follow-up 30 to 45 days later, we actually asked about which of these strategies did you actually implement. And we saw that over 80% reported that they had talked to other staff about the topics that were covered in the PD. And almost 60% said that they had either started or supported their school's gay-straight alliance. And almost 60% also said they had responded to student disclosures around this. So we saw that there was an uptake in some of the strategies that we had discussed and that participants had included in their action plans as well. So the qualitative interviews really allowed us to dive into some of the dynamics that are at play in schools, and there were 27 of these interviews that were done. So the first thing we talked about was we asked about other staff members' attitudes, so not only the people being interviewed, but just in general at school. And we saw a wide variability in staff members' attitudes and understanding of the topic. So one respondent summarized it well, and this person said, "I generally find that things fall down in the old rule, a third, a third, and a third. There would be a third who would be passionate, and they would go to the gay pride parade, and they would be really uber supportive. There would be about a third who would go along with it. They'd see it, that it's an important thing, but they're not necessarily passionate about it. And then about a third who would be anywhere from somewhat to very resistant." There was a general perception among respondents that LGBTQ students are not being bullied, or if they are being bullied, it's not any more than any other student who's being bullied in the school. So one person said, "The kids do not get bullied for being gay. They don't get bullied, it's nothing." And another said, "Bullying for the most part is across the board social media. It's really inappropriate things, but out on social media, and that's for everyone. This is not just LGBT." But with that came an acknowledgement that students may not report bullying as a result of stigma or fear that they experience. So someone said, "Unfortunately, a lot of the students don't want to bring it in here because they're like, I don't want to make it worse." That's what we hear a lot. So this teacher said, "Well, I say, well, why didn't you tell us?" And the student says, "Well, it would just make it worse because then I would be a rat and now I'm gay." So, and also, despite the fact that people said that this wasn't a serious issue or wasn't any more serious than other bullying that was happening, almost across the board, people talked about kind of consistent derogatory language that they heard or microaggressions that were occurring in the school. So one person said, "Now, understand our kids in this generation, they have terminology like, oh, this is gay, that's gay. Kids will just use it kind of like, oh, you're stupid." So that's what one person said. And another said, "The boys will say things from time to time that are derogatory to them, but it's not like a hatred kind of thing. It's just them not understanding that the word fag or something like that can be a derogatory term." And finally, someone said, there's definitely a lack of compassion for the use of the word gay and stuff like that. Kids call each other gay or faggots all the time. Obviously, you stop it when it happens, but they don't see it as a problem. And then people talked about kind of a lack of knowledge of how to identify bullying and what to do when it is identified. So someone said, I don't know that teachers have not the ability, but if they have the background knowledge to be able to say that's not bullying. So we need to address it. And then also people talked about the need to do this kind of training that we had done for the whole school or for more staff members to interact with students. So one person said, I think the Safe Spaces training, which was the name of our training, would be good for the whole school or the whole district, because there's some things, we've had students come down and say that a teacher said something like a joke, but the students thought it was offensive. And knowing the teacher, they were probably just joking, but they were saying it as if it was offensive. And then another said, I think just an awareness training for all staff across the board, because we have a lot of teachers who don't want to deal with this issue at all. There was also an acknowledgement, however, that although this training is needed, that there are other competing school priorities and other issues going on. And so one person said, I think probably sometimes in the hallways things are said, that if we stopped at every single thing that was said that could be deemed bullying, I would stop every 5 feet. So this idea that maybe you could respond if it was something in your classroom or something within your control, but if you're out in the hallway, there's all these things going on all the time that you have to prioritize what you're responding to. And then another person also talked about the very serious issues that are facing students and schools in Chicago and across the country, like violence, and how those issues take priority. So this person said, it's more kids starting with each other, and then they are rivals in this school. There's like extra security from downtown, which is central office, so there's extra security from downtown because there's a lot of fighting. And from what I've heard, it's different factions, and after school out in the park, there will be an issue. There's gang and intergang violence, and that seems to be a grander issue than playground bullying. So in the context of these other challenges that's going on, these small microaggressions that teachers are hearing in the hallway don't seem like something that they need to or have the energy to respond to. So in terms of conclusions, I think we can see that a multidisciplinary collaborative can create innovative content if you have the right partners at the table, and it can be low cost to the district. Training does have the capacity to change attitudes and increase confidence in staff members' ability to address bullying. And there is, though, a varying level of understanding and commitment seen among school staff to this issue, which is probably not that surprising to people. But that poses unique challenges when you're thinking about how to extend this training across the whole district. And then some school staff report that LGBTQ bullying is not really a problem, but then when we dove a little bit deeper into the data, we saw that actually they were telling us it was a big problem because it was going on all the time and students were scared to report it and people didn't know how to respond to it, which suggests the need for even more training to help people even identify that this is such a serious issue and has such serious consequences. So we are using these evaluation results to develop a revised training that's focusing just on the LGBTQ-related content, and it's going to be more accessible, so we're going to make it available online as well as in person, which is really important in a district that has very few professional development days for teachers. And we are focusing on, we have four modules for this training. So the first is an intro to LGBTQ identities, which is just really kind of like a general 101 introduction to terms and statistics. The second is exploring gender, which focuses on the ideas of being transgender and gender nonconforming and the spectrum of gender. The third module is focusing on intersectionality and oppression, and that's where we're really going to talk about the issue of homelessness for LGBTQ youth, as well as school pushout and the school-to-prison pipeline. And so we're going to tie in other departments within our district as well and talk about school discipline and how that's being implemented. And then the final module will be on building allyship, which really focuses on more tangible skills and strategies that can be done in schools. So we're hoping it's going to be available in the spring, and we are going to have ongoing evaluation of this as well to see how we're doing. But we have some questions, obviously, that we still need to answer, and one of them is how do we make this relevant for a diverse range of staff and teachers? I think ideally we'd like to have everyone who's in the school building be able to participate in something like this, because we know that trusted adults in the building can be security guards, nutrition support services staff, and not only teachers. But how do we make this approachable and relevant for all of them. And then another large problem is, how do we prioritize the needs of LGBTQ students in the context of the other challenges that are facing the students, especially in low-income communities in our schools? And that is a problem for, you know, the limited resources that we have, as well as for these other challenges that are happening. So we'll stay tuned. Maybe we'll have answers for that at a later, next year. So I just want to acknowledge these individuals who helped create the content for the training. I also want to acknowledge Sarah Wagner, who helped with a lot of the data analysis and is here as well. So thank you.
Questions for Laura? Oh boy, here we go. Yes, please.
That's a good question. The way we talked about it in the training is we talked a lot about how do you address bullying, like this sort of bullying that's happening in the moment. So what do you do when you hear it? So how do you respond, you know, call it out, that what's going on, and then what kind of things can you talk about, and, you know, how do you move forward from that, and then how can you follow up with the student later, like who's being bullied as well.
Okay, I'll ask my
second
question.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Yeah, so we chose these schools because through our grant, we work very closely with 20 schools that are part of our initiative. And so as part of our grant deliverables, there are a number of different things that we do with these 20 schools. So they were invited to participate since this was just a pilot year. But we will be making this available for everyone in K-12. And we also have our sexual health education policy requires sexual health education every year from K-12. So we're and the only people who can teach sex ed in our district have to be trained. So we train teachers in general sexual health education for K-12.
Hey, that was going to be a question I was going to ask. What is the training level of your physical educators who are ensconced with teaching? Because I know I went through the health and PE program.
Yeah, so anyone who so our policy passed in February of 2013, and anyone who teaches sexual health education in Chicago Public Schools has to get trained, and the training is led by our office, and it's an in-person or online training that lasts 7 hours. And our curriculum is aligned with the National Sexuality Education Standards, so our training as well covers all the topics that are outlined in the National Sexuality Education Standards. But not everyone who participated in this training had completed that training. It wasn't a requirement. But anyone who teaches sex ed has to have completed that training.
So one more question? Yes.
So we picked the 20 schools that we picked initially to be in the pilot are from high need areas based on STI rates and other factors like that. So they're I couldn't say statistically that they're representative, but they likely, I mean, are on the end, the end with high rates of STI. So principals actually before so this is a 5-year initiative, and so principals had to sign a letter of consent.
Well, that's too probably.
A letter of commitment at the start saying that they would be part of the initiative for all 5 years. So they were supportive, and we meet with them every year as well, especially because they're new principals in a lot of the schools every year. So we meet with them every year, and they know they always know what's going on, and they have to okay the teachers and staff attending our training. So and a lot some of the people that we interviewed were principals and assistant principals.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm on part two. So, so going back to kind of like the whole reactive kind of like teachers, I was just curious if any of thing in your intervention or if you know of other interventions that more sort of take a more proactive approach in dealing with the bullies themselves, because it seems that we're kind of working around the issue that makes things better for the people, for the victims, instead of kind of like actually stopping it before it actually happens. So is there anything within your intervention that, you know, is working towards that or you know anything that's going on?
Yeah, so we have a whole department that's the Office of Social and Emotional Learning, and that's separate from our office, but we collaborate with them. And a large part of what they do focuses on school climate. So they actually, and I was talking to someone from that department about this, they actually view bullying from that prevention point of view. So they're looking at establishing, we have a Chicago Public Schools has a climate code of conduct specific to school climate. And so they have a lot of programs that are going on, and they work with large cohorts of schools as well to improve the school climate to get prevention. And then also a lot of work around restorative justice as well to address the different people who are involved in bullying and violence and other issues that are going on.
Thank you, Laura.
SAT teachers are only about a third of our people teaching.
We'll probably have some additional time at the end, but we want to make sure that Curtis has plenty of time, okay?